3:37. Just to finish off. Wait, I'm sorry. Wait, did this ever be level? No. I'm sorry. No. We're up to pasuk hey. We're up to pasuk. No. I'm all confused here. One second. What's going on over here? We start the radak. We did pasuk dalid. We did pasuk dalid. We did that. Okay. We're up to pasuk hey in the radak. Page 335 in the radak pasuk hey on the. Apart towards the top, apart in Malpi Hanavol. Okay, so we learn according to Rashi and the Mitzudos, this refers either to a song that is unique, a very special song that only special people know, or only special people are allowed to sing. And then we had another interpretation, apartim, from Rashi. Rashi says, with precision, articulation, those people who know how to be poirate, to get the words out of their mouth with clarity, without any slurring. That was the chituch hadibur. That's how Rashi learned pshat in the word hapartim. A very unique, interesting pshat. To speak with clearness. So here, the...
You see the same sort of expression with respect to paskening halachas. Chituch hadin.
The slice.
Know how to... Clarify the issue and clarify the...
Clarity. It's the same word? I think it's a different word. It's the cut. There they use the word to cut. To slice. Here it's a different word. Here the word over here is part that means that it's very...
Okay.
So it says... This would Rashi also cite. The word peret means a single grape. You have a cluster of grapes and you harvest on the vineyard and some of the grapes fall on the floor. So each individual grape is called a peret. Peret karmecha. Another example we say in the Yud Gimel Midos She'atar Nidresh is a prat and a klal. This is the inyan of hayichidus. This is individuality. There, hahevdel min haklal, separation from the klal. Okay, the individual versus the group. So what does it mean here in this pasuk? She'oimim shireyem al pi hanavol kol mala umala b'shir al pi nigun hanavol shloitid be'achas la'acheres b'nigun. This is really what they said in the Mitzudos, is that each melody is unique. You cannot make a mistake and think that this melody is the same or similar to another melody. If you listen to some musicians, I don't want to say which one in particular. There's certain musicians that they famous people who on the scene, they have songs. If you listen very carefully, all of their songs are very, very similar. There's a certain style that they can't break away from. And that's not what this means here. Here he's saying that each melody is unique. You cannot possibly confuse it with a different melody. I want to say that when it comes to Torah, comes to Jewish machshava, ideas, lamdis. So you see that certain types of gedolim when they are machadish Torah, all of their Torah is very similar. It all works with the same approach. Brisk. It's always at svei dinim. There are two. You take a concept and you break it up into two different dimensions. There's the gavra and the chefza. So you can break down almost everything in kol Torah kula into lamdis, the gavra, and the chefza. In drush, same thing. There are certain styles of learning, and that style is consistent. The exception, someone told us to me, Rabbi Schmidt, he told us, is the notable exception is the...
We did discuss this.
The Chassam Sofer was so brilliant, so unique, that you cannot compare one var to the next. Each one of his verlach had a unique style. And you cannot even approximate, you cannot even estimate that what he's saying now is the same, what's being said now is the same, was authored by the same person because the style is so different. So that's what is over here. Each one is completely unique. A harp. And a harp, there are strings. Each string is separate. So he's saying something very interesting is the word in HaParitim al-Pi HaNaval is a word that is reserved for a harp. Only in a harp do you see the uniqueness? Does each string stand apart? I guess or string instruments. In a string instrument, each string is completely separate. This protim. And that's why we use what a partim al picha naval. It's a verb. It is you play the harp. We use this specific term. V'yesh farshim partim be'inyin peruta v'divrei rishonim zakle. Man nesnu kolecha peruta l'menagein money. It means cash. Every person who passes by, they drop a penny. They drop a penny in the hat. Okay. V'yonisam tirgim dimonan alpum nivla. Which means dimonan alpum nivla. I don't know what that means. Okay, I don't know. I have very negligent. I have to really spend more time on the targum. All of the ikarim are in the targum. But he has new interpretation. Dimonan. You know, I don't know. Dimonan. I have a very good dictionary for targum. Nachar. But maybe next time. Dimonan alpi nivla. David chashul lechem kleshir. K'may David shayu yodei nagein. These people are foolish to think that they were equal to David. The general thing, where everyone to translate the word partim, whether it means the melodies are unique, whether it means people would put coins, would give these musicians money, whether it means that each note is distinct, whether it means that the common denominator is that they're busy living a life of luxury, they're living a life of indulgence, and they're not focusing on serving Hashem. Pasuk Vav, Hashar Sim b'Mizrake Yayin, b'Mizrakim Shem Gedolim Shesim Yayin, large utensils. According to the Radak, the focus here is they're drinking extra large cups. Remember Bloomberg, he wanted to enact a law that you're not allowed to sell super large soft drinks. He wanted to make it illegal for a vendor to sell a cup of soda that is jumbo size, because this is the cause of obesity. Okay? So that did not go well in New York City. One of the common arguments was, so I'll buy two cups of soda. You can't tell me what to do. So that did not go off well. But over here it says what?
Yeah, it fizzled out.
It fizzled out. Very good. But over here, the message is that it is extra large. And this is a sign of indulgence. Next. So this is just come over here to give you the grammatical form. The word mizrak u mizrake, it's in the short form. Why does it say mizrake and it does not say mizrakim? The answer is it's a form of a word. It says kmo chaloinim, like it does not say, it says chaloinei, windows. The windows in the Beis Hamikdash. The word is chaloinei. It does not say chaloinim. What? Right. It's a form word. Nite na'a monim. It means plantings, pleasant saplings. Does not say the word nit or nim, nite nim, but rather it says nite kmo nit nitoim, plants. Okay, you give you examples. Malachei roim, k'moy malachei roim, mei hamorim, v'hadamim lochem. The understanding taking parish is samuch b'chesaroyim. Shetirgim de shosan b'fei lo von d'chsaf chamakir. We learned yesterday. I know what that means. Shetirgim. Let's live with that. Next, reish shemonim mivchas shebeshmonim hamurchakim. Okay, the fragrant spices. V'loy nechlu al derech ve'in chol b'kem olai. No one got sick. No one got sick. We learned two perushim. No one is upset that their brothers have gone into exile, or no one is getting sick when they hear the Navi say that you are going to go into exile tomorrow, because they just don't believe the words of the Navi. Vanifal bezeina mikavel mikre minakal. Okay, this is a grammatical form. Let's leave that. Kisheva Yosef. Hay roshiye machala machiv aysam vehem loy nech lemenu. He's learning like the pshat in the mitzudos is that they should have had tsar over their brothers who have gone into exile. Vesheder. I'm now on page 337. Yosef who aysam shagolu min hashvatim. It's referring to the aseret hashvatim. Terem meloich yiravim ben yoyosh. Before the last king, Malchus Ephraim, Kari Bichlal Ephraim, or Yosef, the Malchus of Ephraim, the Malchus of Yisrael is called by the name of Ephraim, or Yosef, Ki Mishevet Ephraim, Hoye Yeravim Ben Nevat, because he came from Shevet Ephraim, Shemolach, Alasev, Shashvat, Tchila, Ki Shenechlik HaMalchus, when the Malchus was divided, Kam Hoye Rabbi Mispar, Uvi Gedula, Mishar Shevatim, Zulasi, this also is a very large number, the olav nibe Yaakov avin of Yamar v'ulam achiv hakatoin yigdal mimenu v'zaro yiye miloy hagoyim. Okay, this is a very important radak. He's telling us another interpretation. We had this once before. Another interpretation why the entire Klal Yisrael is called by the name of Ephraim. Because they were the largest. Ephraim, Shevet Ephraim, appears to have been the largest Shevet. It was the bracha of Yaakov avinu v'zaroy yiye Miloy Hagoyim will be the fullness of the nations, and therefore, because they stand out in number, that's why the entire Klal Yisrael,
the largest of the ten,
correct?
Including Yehuda.
Well, okay, that's not necessarily so. It might. We don't really know for sure. We don't know for sure. It just says over here that he was. It says it doesn't say it refers specifically. Okay, right. Zulasi Yehuda. You're right. He says beferish. Except for Yehuda, he was numerous. V'yomar v'yikor v'hem shmi. Another answer, another very beautiful answer is that in the bracha that Hashem gave that Yaakov Avinu gave to Ephraim and Manasseh, v'yikorei v'hem shmi v'shem avosai. Now that was said to two shvatim, and that was said to Ephraim and Manasseh. Okay, so Yaakov Avinu specifically said that when you're going to refer to Klal Yisrael, you're going to refer to them as Klal Yisrael, Vikarei Vohem. Now, what happened to Menashe? Why did Menashe lose out on this bracha? We don't hear anyone being called Klal Yisrael by the name of Menashe. I don't know. It could be because Menashe, he gave up. They settled on the Eder Hayarden. Well, that's not really so. Yeah, Menashe was both. Menashe was Chatzi Shevet Menashe. It was Reuven in God and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. So I don't
they
know.
They were only sent there.
To keep them together, the glue, right? To keep they were the glue between the two. You're right. So I don't really know, but it's something which is a nice idea, a nice point to keep in mind is this idea that Ephraim got a bracha from Yosef v'karei vohem shmi. Okay, let's go further. Okay. The figure, therefore, the Shigur Bishol B'Shem Ephraim became Yosef Hay Bechar became Reuven. Yosef was the Bechar in the place of Reuven. In other words, why was he the Bechar? Because Reuven Bechari At Koychi Vareishis Oin Yeser Seis V'Yeser Pachas Kamayim Al Toisar means no longer will you be given the extra. What's the extra? Bechar. Yosef was the Bechor. Bechor gets Pishnai. Just like a Bechor gets in the Yerusha double, a Bechor has a certain honor that the other brothers do not have. But that's only if he is deserving. Being that Reuven made mistakes, he was Bebalbel, the bed of his father, and he acted rashly in destroying Shechem, and he was really the main person responsible for. No, I'm sorry. He was not, Bechiras Yosef not. But because he acted impetuously, especially when he came to the bed, when Rachel died, therefore Yaakov Avinu took away from him the firstborn right and gave it to who? To the other firstborn. Who was the other firstborn? Yosef. Yosef was the firstborn to Rachel. Therefore, Nikra Yisrael al Shmo v'chidam b'mizma roya Yisrael hazina noyheg katzoin Yosef. The shepherd of Yisrael, listen. Who is the shepherd? Noyheg katzoin. Who is the noyheg katzoin? The one that is the leader of the sheep? Yosef. Yosef is called the Bechor. Okay, so therefore we have a lot of very nice interpretations and telling us very important yisoidos. teaching us here in this Radak, middle of nowhere, why is Klal Yisrael called by the name of Yosef, or by the name of Ephraim? And he has presented here a whole collection of ideas that we don't commonly hear. The most common reason why the Aseres HaShvatim are called by the name of Ephraim is because their leader, Yeravam ben Nevat, came from Shevet Ephraim. But here he tells us many more reasons. Number one, Ephraim was the most numerous. This was because of the blessing of Yaakov Avinu. Vizaro Yihyeh Miloy HaGoyim. Another reason why he's called by the name of Ephraim is because they got a special baracha from Yaakov Avinu. Vikarei Vohem Shemi. Another reason why they're called by Ephraim is because their father is the Bechor of Rachel. And even though you'll say, so what, but there's another Bechor of Reuven. Well, Reuven lost. He lost his Milo, he lost his distinction because of his sins of being mebaldel, the couch of his father. And do you have any other reasons? No, that's pretty much what he says. And the pasuk also supports that noye katzoin, the one that is the noyeg of the tzoin, is going to be Yosef. Pasuk Zayin, last pasuk in the series, the nefer had neshon miyosef lo shloim neshon nechlu al shever achayhem shegalu, the remnants of Yosef that did not get sick over the loss of their brothers. Ata b'karov yiglu b'rosh goylim t'chil l'golos Yehuda. They're going to be the first ones to go into exile. Okay, they're going to be the first t'chil l'golos Yehuda. The people who did not mourn over the loss of the Aseres HaShvatim are going to be the first ones. They're going to be an embarrassment in front of the world that they were singled out to be the first ones to go into exile. Next, and then we'll come an end to the Mizrach. Now remember, we had over here a discussion. What over here is this Mizrach Seruchim? What Marzeach? What exactly is this word, the Marzeach? So we had just briefly mentioned in the Mitzvot and Rashi, it refers to a party. It's a very strange word. It's a new word to us. It's a party, and it's either Seruchim, meaning that it's excessive. Different interpretations of what it means. Seruchim is going on the party, going on the people, going on the tablecloths. But the word Mirzach appears to, according to all of the interpretations that we have had so far, refers to a party. And now when you go into exile, you're going to stop partying. You're going to deal with the reality, the pain of what it means to go into Golos. And here he's going to elaborate. Nevar Neshom Yosef, Vesar Mirzach Seruchim, Yikrav Yehovoi, Eve Loisam, Shoyu Seruchim Al Ar Soisam, Ushmeinim umis angim. Now we'll come warning to those that are lying on their beds, and those that are fat, or they smear themselves with fragrant oil and live a life of luxury. Now their mourning will come near. Visar l'shain kariva. He learns the word visar means it will now come near. It will now come near upon, and it will come near to them. Chorbin. Kumo sura shiva po. Turn and come here. We normally think the word sura means go away. Here he's saying it means it will come close. It will come close, and that means sar means.
No, because it means go away from the direction you're heading.
Right, go away. So it depends. Here. It's relative to where you're going. So the Radak learns in this context the sar, it will come upon them. Upon the Mirzach Seruchim. He's learning the pasuk a little bit different than the other Mepharshim. He's saying that the Sar, the subject of the word Vesar, is the Mirzach Seruchim, the people that engage in excessive parties. It will come upon them, the curse of Rosh Goylim. That's not the way the other Mepharshim learned. The other Mepharshim learned is an independent statement. Vesar, it will cease to exist, these lavish parties. That's how we learn the pasuk until now, according to Rashi and the Metudas. The Radak is not learning like that. He's learning that the people who engage in the Mirzach Seruchim, Sar, it will now come upon them, it will turn towards them the curse of being the Roish Goylim. Let's go further. Vesar is Lashon Kriva, Kamay Vesur Purush Shivapam, Asur Dovi Ere. Moshe Rabbeinu, none other than Moshe Rabbeinu said, let me go turn out to see what's going on. V'yedei minhoin Mar Zichin U Machbin, Harishina Chaf Hashtia base, who give you a Sinzal, Tinasen Kivina Siliviti, give my hat. Okay, it means to give. Okay, let's leave this out. I don't know the Targum, so let's leave out the Targum for another time. The Yeshnus Chais Machbin, another, there is another gear in the words of the Targum. Okay, we'll leave it out for right now. Let's go now to Umir Zach Rabba Seinazal. Pershu Evel. We mentioned this yesterday briefly, and that is the word Umir Zach is a word that is reserved for mourning. Now what do we mean over here? V'chei al tavo do not come base marzeach. Marzeach means a word of mourning. V'samchum izeh apostik sho'evel meisi b'roish. Shenemar v'sar mirzach siruchim. It will now, they will turn towards the mourning. V'sar mirzach siruchim. Marzeach nasa kisar lisruchim. The marzeach means the mourner, perish. Lisruchim lanishorim kolaymar. L'sha'or ha'am, k'mo v'serach ha'idef, sheperushoi, sha'or ha'yiriya ha'idefes. We have in the Mishkan, the covering of the Mishkan, it will drape on the floor like the veil, like the kala. A bride has a gown, and the bottom of the gown, it drags on the ground. That's exactly what the Mishkan looks like. The Mishkan had the tsura of a kala. The tzur of the kala, where the covering of the Mishkan, it dragged, it overflowed on in the back. Oh, what is it called? The train?
Train. Yes.
The train. So just like a kala, it's a train. That's exactly what the Mishkan looked like. The Mishkan had a train. It was marching in the Midbar, traveling in the Midbar like the kala. She walks down the aisle. So the Mishkan was traveling in the Midbar. The oil by a chasana is symbolic of the desert. Everything that happens by a chasana is a dogma of Matan Torah. Where did Matan Torah take place? In the desert. By Matan Torah, there was fire. It says there was thunder. There was lightning. That is why the parents, the Shushpinin, the parents, when they march down to the Chuppah, they march down with candles. They go around the mountain, they go around the Chosan. The Chosan represents the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the Shechina. Klal Yisrael, they encamped around the mountain. So why does the Kala march down? Why does the Kala march out when the Kala, that's the highlight of the wedding, no? Isn't that the highlight of the wedding? Not when the Chosan comes. When the Chosan comes down, everyone's still talking. Everyone's still texting, right? What's the nicest part of the kala?
And he looks like he's headed to his own execution.
What do you mean? Right.
You shouldn't say that to a bacha. Yeah.
You see the expression on it? The Rabbah writes in one of his farah that it's like he's being dragged in by the U.S. Marshals. He actually uses that in English in this sefer.
That a small child as the mother, right, the colors rest in white, and the mother explains here this right day and this, and then the child continues, and why is the chosan in black?
The chosan is dressed in black. Why is it? Because it's death, right? It's the colors are white.
There's a very, also has a kittel.
A kittel, right?
He's just wearing an overcoat over it.
Okay, there's a whole. There's a lot of discussion. Exactly, where does it come from that a kala should wear a white dress? Where does this come from? A kala wears a white dress. It's not at all simple. There are many who argue that this is a non-Jewish minhag. Okay, it's not at all simple. Okay, this is the minhag Yisrael today by most people. By the Sfardim, it's not necessarily so. I think by the Taimonim, there are certain groups that we are not familiar with. They have different costumes. They were costumes. What?
Custom, not
costumes. What? Customs. They have different customs. Okay, they wear different garments. Okay, but we have a minhag to wear white, and it's not so simple to trace the source of this minhag. It's not an easy thing. But one thing that is easy is to understand the train of the Kala. Because the Feyosh Chazal, it's the Mishkan. The Mishkan represents the Shechina. It is the Shechina. And the Kala Yisrael is compared to the Chasdan Kala. Sometimes the Shechina is the Kala. Sometimes the Shechina is the Chasdan. It depends. But one thing we learn in Chazal, clear, is Rashi, V'serach, it's a Pasuk, V'serach Oideif, is that the Mishkan had the tzura of a kala, and what is the tzura of a kala in the eyes of the Torah? That the there's something in the front that goes down just a little bit, and in the back there is a train. And when the kala marches down at a wedding, she has a train, and that means that the audience, the red carpet upon which she marches, is really symbolic of the desert. The desert, just like the Mishkan traveled in the desert, traveled for 40 years, it guided us in Lechtech Acharai Bamidbar, Bi Eretz Loi Zeruah. It's a land Shaloi Zeruah. This was the Chesed Nu'urayich. That's the purpose of marching down an aisle. You are reenacting the symbolism of going through the desert. Where? You come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the Chosid. The Chosid represents the Shechina. And Klal Yisrael, we were the Kala. Klal Yisrael, the time of Matan Torah was the Kala. And Hashem was the Chasan. We encamped around the mountain. That's why we go around seven times. Some really go around three times. Why seven times? Three times. One time. Who goes around, by the way, who goes around? Who goes around the Chasan? So go to a wedding today. Go to a wedding today. And who are you going to see that goes around? It is the mothers, the two mothers. So I recently had the good fortune of transferring, converting my parents' wedding movies from 50 years ago into digital form. I have it, I could show it to you on my phone. I have the whole thing uploaded. And there, my parents had a very, I would say for the time, of a heavy-duty Haredi wedding, okay, relatively speaking. Okay, it was all of the Gedolim were there. Rav Moshe was there. My grandfather, Rav Kagan, and All the RJJ people, and all the people from the Lower East Side, including the Skolner Rebbe, was there. And today, this wedding would be banned. Okay, I'll tell you for example. First of all, who marched around the Kala? The grandfathers. The men also. Everyone. Everyone marched around the Kala. The men and the women. Not just the women. The two grandfathers, the two fathers, I call grandfathers, the two fathers marched around the Kala. Okay, so you never see that today. You don't see that today. Why not? I don't know. But l'chayra, if the reason why you're going around the Kala is going around the Chasam, marched around the Chasam. If the reason why you march around the Chasam is because the Chasam it's a reenactment of the mimic of Matan Torah, when Klal Yisrael encamped around Har Sinai, around the Mokim of the Shechina, when Hashem came down to give the Torah, only the women encamped around Har Sinai, not the men. No such thing. Everyone encamped around Har Sinai. So El Chayre makes much more sense that the men also should go around the Chosan. But for some reason today, I guess because of Tznius, it's not Tzniustic. Achayre Ari V'loi Achayre Isha. I always joke with my sister. I open up the door for her. Open up the door and I say to her, Achayre Ari V'loi Achayre Isha. Better walk behind a lion than go behind a woman. In America, it's ladies first. Right? In America, I open the door, you have to be a gentleman. On a date, right? Make believe. Open up the door, ladies first. You open up the door, you're so gentle, you're so kind. You go and you go pick up a girl, you go to the door, you open up the door of the car, open up the car door, you open it up, it goes inside, and then everything, you close the door, and you say to yourself, forget it, I'm not going out with her again. But in the meantime, you gotta be nice, you gotta be nice. So I joke with people that I can joke with who won't give me a frasco over the face, even though they do anyway, is I say, instead of saying ladies first, I say the words of Chazal, which tell you the last thing you should do in your life is walk behind a woman. Let a woman go before you. Achore ari. Better walk behind the lion, achore isha, than walk behind the woman. Okay, that's probably the excuse they give today for the men not going around the chasan, because they would have to be walking behind their wife, walking behind their chutanim. But in those days they did it. Rabbi Yisai, that's the way it was. It was a davar pashut, that both of the fathers would also walk around the chasan. I'll tell you something else they would never ever do today. They did ketzad merakta lifnei akala in the very beginning, when the chasan kala came in. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing for the very first time, Mr. and Mrs. Immediately, the chasan and kala came in together, and the chasan kala sat down, and everyone danced in front of the chasan and kala. Ketzad Miraktin was done in the very beginning. They first danced Od Yishama, and then right away everyone danced in the chasan and kala, and then later was their separation. Did the kala go to the women and the men stayed with the chasan? Today, if they do, if you go to a chasna of Bnei Torah, if they'll even do a ketzad merakta lifnei akala, if they'll even do it, it'll be at the very, very end. It will be at the second dance, towards the end. The first dance, never. Never seen this in modern times, in recent times, when the chasan, when they would bring the kala into the men's section, and everyone would stand around, and they do ketzad merakta. Some don't even do it at all. And those who do it towards the end of the second dance. This is very common amongst the Bnei Torah. Another thing that was so unique, this would never, ever, ever, ever happen today, is later in the wedding, they brought the kala to the chasan. Who picked up the kala? The girls. The girls picked up the kala on a chair, and the men picked up the chasan on the chair, and they came together, which means that the girls and the boys were standing mamish right opposite one another. And the girls were holding the kala, and the boys were holding the chasan right next to each other, in the presence of Rav Moshe Feinstein and all mamish, all the Gedol Yisrael. And this was pashut. This was not an issue.
There were strong girls.
They weren't so strong. I noticed, I was looking very carefully, the girls were not so strong. They were struggling, and they couldn't get the kala too high either. They were struggling. They weren't so strong.
Your father wear a frock.
No.
Chaim Lindy used to wear a frock with a flower in the lapel.
They wore tuxedos. Yeah. Not a frock. They wore tails. That's not a frock. A tail. Tails. A tuxedo. Right. That was very common. That was generally very common to wear tails. A chassan wore tails. That was up hat with a what's it called?
Top hat.
Right, that's another thing. That's just a general thing. Okay, but I'm talking about the religious element of the ta'aruvis. And whoever heard of separate seating? Whoever heard of that? Mechitza, forget about. No mechitza. Separate seating was very, very rare. And over the time, achshrei dar, they use the term, we became kosher.
It wasn't separate seating?
I don't believe so. I don't know. I can't see. I think his weddings, of Moshe's weddings, by his children were all mixed seating. About his own wedding in Europe, in Russia, he's in Russia.
The
photographer, trained as photographer, David Rashul, he did all of Moshe's grandchildren.
He
said it was mixed seating, separate dancing. The whole thing was mixed seating.
The children or the grandchildren?
Grandchildren.
Even the grandchildren. Because Rav Moshe's children for sure was mixed seating. For sure was mixed seating. Okay, whatever. Okay, so just whatever. Let's go further. Over here, but it's a very interesting thing. The Mizrach Seruchim is a kala. Okay, let's go further. Over here, This idea of Shabusha Shaar Hayuya Haydeves, that's why it's a Miki Mizrahu Idin Simcha. Okay, so over here he translates this idea, he's explaining to us that the word Siruchim means an ovel. Okay, the Ovel is a mourner. The word Mirzach is a mourner, and he is the leader over the Seruchim, the other people. This means to say is that a mourner, he's Yoshev Rosh. When there is an event, when there is the Sudas Havro, when they're sitting together, who is the one that is the leader? Who is the one that is given the most honor? It is the mourner. He is a Mirzach for the Seruchim, the other people in the assembly. So the Seruchim means the others, and the Mirzach is a reserved word for a mourner. So it's teaching us over here, for Ato, Yiglu Bereshko, a curse. You are going to go into an exile, you're going to be the first of the nations, the Tsar, and now it will turn towards you. It will begin a tekufa in time where Mirzach Seruchim, everyone is going to assemble in the form of mourners. The Rosh Habayis will be a mourner, and his family will surround him. It's not going to be a party of joy, it's going to be an assembly of mourners. Let's go further. Vidas Yoinasan. Okay, I'm now three lines down. Okay, Vidas, I'm in the paragraph of Mirzach. Ki Mirzach hu inyan simcha. V'hilulim sharei tirgim v'yedei minhoin mar zichin. Okay, whatever that means, it means party. V'li amar ki yo'evil yosu mihem, el ha-simcha tosu mihem.
And the wraps shall pass away.
Okay, and here then it means that there's going to be, sar means it will turn away. It will, joy will cease to exist. We have before mar zichin. They made for themselves parties. For you, Kari Lohem, Rashi quoted this yesterday. They called to the people, they called guests to come. It means to raise up your voice. The word Mirzach means to cry out. It will now cry, will turn towards them cries. They're going to cry out the Seruchim, the leftovers. The She'eris HaPleta, those that are not killed, will scream, will cry out in bitterness, in tears, in sorrow over their pathetic state of being. Okay.
Maybe that translation comes from the mar, meaning bitter.
Ah, mir is very, very good. Mir is bitter, bitterness, and zach, what is zach, how does that...
Okay,
it's obviously a very, very hard word because we have over here so many Pedushim trying to, everyone's trying to give you their own spin on this word. But just to summarize, basically either it means just a party, and by however you translate the word Mirzach, it affects how do you translate the word Sar. Sar seems to mean either it means to turn, to go towards, or to turn away. Either you can go both ways. The word Sar can be used both ways, to come near or to go distance. The word Mirzach can mean so many things. Either it can mean a party, it could mean to cry out in mourning, it could mean the Ovel, the person who sits at the head of the meal, of a mourner's meal, or Mirzach, okay, pretty much those are pretty much the translations. The Seruchim could either refer to the tablecloth, could refer to the way, the leftovers, can refer to the mourners who are disgusting. Does it come from the word extra, like the serach ho'edev, or does the word seruchim refer to disgusting? That the people who are now in a state of disgust because of their situation, they will cease from having parties, or the parties are disgusting, or all the various interpretations, each one of these words, that's why this expression is so complex, because each one of these words can be translated in multiple ways. They're all unique words, sar, towards or away, mirzach, crying, parties, mourning, happiness, seruchim, extra, disgusting, leftovers. Each of these words can be translated in multiple ways, which therefore gives us multiple possible combinations and interpretations of this expression. Okay, so now we're with Rashi, the Mitzvahs, and the Radak. Now we're on to Perish number 4. Let's look at the Malbim. The Malbim always surprises us with chidushim, with novel interpretations of the psukim. So we're up to, let's go back to the pasuk, Dalid in the Malbim, which is on page 333. Okay, 333. Can't go wrong with that. The last line. Hashaychem al mita shein hamita hasuil lintois olecha ben miyamim ulaila v'ho eres hu miyuchil l'mishkav nashim ukitanim v'cholim u'me'u nogim balaila. Okay, so we have over here now, he's giving us a very, very fascinating insight into this pasuk. There are two words for a bed. The word mita and the word eres. The word mita is a type of bed that you sleep on by day and by night. It's a couch. It's something which you relax, a recliner. It's a recliner. An eres is something which is miyuchad, he says, for women and children. Now, is this by day or by night, as we say, or choylim, anyone that is very, very delicate. Umunogim balayla vahim shachvu al mita shein, they lie on mitos of shein. The al ar soysam hamayuchad lemishkav isha shaychadav. So here it's saying over here is, it's mixed up. Because any person that needs to lie on a bed that is very delicate, it would be an eres. It would be noshim, kitanim, people who are sick. For them, you would reserve an eres, which in general is a type of bed which is meant for delicate people, and you would expect that bed to be lined with shein, ivory, yeah?
But we say at Tachman, I assume it's David Amelech speaking, the Dimarsi,
RC.
I'm set.
Because David was sick for a choyle, that's what it says. A choyle lies on an eres. Eres davoy, my sick bed. Davoy comes from the Lashon, a sick person. A sick person, eres, that's what it says. The Malbim says here very clearly, that who lies on these beds? The choylim, people who are sick. In the Mizmor we say for Tachnun, there David was deathly ill. David was sick for very, very, David almost died. That's referring to the different kufis in his life. But he was crying to Hashem when he was ill. So yeah, that's why the word... He's saying very good that when it comes to Oymel Chabasha, so you have to there understand it to mean that his recliner, okay, ume unagim. Over here, the Malbim says people who are very delicate, pampered people, they also lie down on an eres. So I guess every person, you know, when your recliner, when you want to recline, you want to take a break, you lie down on an eres. Then you're in the category of a mi'unagim. But when a person, generally, you lie down on a mita. A mita is the regular bed that a regular person lies down on, bein bayam bein malayla. So here's what the Malm is coming to tell us, a very interesting insight. If you have a limited amount of ivory, shein is obviously a very expensive material, which bed would you line, would you use, for which bed would you use the ivory? For the eres or for the mita? The eres. Because the eres is, by definition, is the luxury bed. So on the luxury bed, you use luxury material. On the bed that's not luxury, you use a shmata. You use some straw. Because this is not the luxury bread, the bed. Here he comes along and he says that these people were so pampered that even for their mita, the bed that was not meant for luxury, a bed that was just meant for, you know, to sit down and whatever, even that was laid with shame. That's the hashoichvim al mitois shame. It doesn't say in the pasuk hashoichvim al eres shame. That's what you would expect. But here he says, no, even the mitois were lying with shame. Usruchim al arsoisam. And you could only imagine what they used on their eres. Okay, that's what he's trying to bring out, I believe. That's the chiddush.
In English, over here, the alternate explanation by Inayar Sower, as far as they're talking about, is cradle.
Oh, very good. The cradle when he was a baby, which makes sense. Because right. That's exactly what it's over here in the Malm. Because the Malm over here says, who is the eres for? The ketanim.
Right.
The ketanim, so it makes sense.
Right.
So if his eres was Barzel, you only could imagine now what he has.
Correct.
So it fits perfectly with what it says in the Malm. So every beautiful Yisoid, there is a Mita and an Eres. A Mita is the regular bed. The Eres is the luxury bed. And here it says that even the ordinary bed was the material that was used to pad. The ordinary bed was the most exquisite that the world had to offer, and that is Shein. Further, the Al Arsoitsam, Ham Yuchadim Lemushkeve, Isha Shoichvim, Suruchim, Hainu Zoinois. On the, now the word arsoisam was the woman's bed. Now this is the question we had yesterday. Why it says shichva zera she'ena shelohem? He's coming to address that question. Rashi and the Radak didn't really. We had a struggle, and because we struggled, we suggested that Rashi is referring to mishkav zohar, and that's why it refers to shichva zera she'ena shelohem. If you learn arsoisam refers to a man's bed, what then does it mean that on the man's bed there was shichva zera she'ena shalohem? If a man is doing an avera with a woman that is not, that's not his wife, so where do you have a shichva zera she'ena shalohem? So he's saying, no, you're making a mistake. The word arsoisam is a woman's bed. It's a bed that is miyuchad for a woman. And if a woman invites into her bed a man that is not her husband, then indeed it is shichva zera she'ena shalohem. He answers the question very simply. Enough to struggle when you know the meaning of the words. If we're ignorant and we don't know the meaning of the words, then we're in a lot of trouble. We read a bed, is this bed, is that bed? No. Know the pshat in the pasuk. An eres is a woman's bed. And now when it says it's a woman's bed, it makes sense. Arsoisam siruchim. What does it mean it was siruchim? It was soiled with the shichva zera of a man that was not their husband. Siruchim hainu zoynes, siruchois hamasrichim b'shichva zera, kimoi. The zoinus he calls the zoinus siruchis hamasrichim b'shichva zera chumay shamu chazal shemasrichim es arsoisam b'shichva zera she'enoi shelohem behem yispanku b'macholos arivim zoylim b'soivim im zoinus v'shelohem. They go on to say over here they committed terrible averos. They would eat and drink, and they would do things shoichlim es hakodim mitzoyin. They ate fat and sheep. They took animals from the a special enclosure where they force fed animals. They drink wine in very large containers. Viloy, we now turn to the page 336. 336, the Koisois Ketanis in the Malbum, Vayim Shechu Bereish Shemonim, Beshem Natoiv, Vahamukha Shehu, Beshem Afar Simon, Bowls of Oil, Vlenechu Al Shevi Yasiv, Lustum Lev Al Tsarska Klav, Lisabel Al Ra, Hanishkafes, Aleim, Bulashiv, Lashem, Tsoim, Bukhiv, Mispaid. They do not pay attention to you to mourn over the Tsarois of Klal Yisrael. Therefore, what is the punishment of Lachinata, Yiglu Bereish Kolim, Kolad Var Moele, Hoyu Siba, Sheyiglu Hata? They're now going to go into exile. Bizman HaKadum. V'loi nisacher gulusom el zman ha'asid. Al sheheim holchu b'roish golim. Sheheim hoyu ha'goylim ha'rishonah. Lefnei humois before the other nations. B'mnei sheumois shomu alev esor asacheihem. V'chashvu ma'chashavais l'nadois u'laharchik es yomara. The goyim were better. The goyim had sympathy for people who suffered. And therefore they did things. They took into account their own sins to prevent, to push away exile. But Rachmana Litzlan, the Jewish people, did not take seriously the situation that was coming upon them, and they did not do teshuva. And therefore, Visar Birzach Suruchim, Sha'al Yidei Shiglu Me'aretzam, Sar V'chodal Hamarzeach V'hamishte Sha'asu El Hasruchim Hainu El Hazoinois Hasruchois Shebavuram. They would make a marzeach u'mishne b'chol yoyim ato yusar ha-marzeach hazeh. The way the Malbim learned pshat in the pasuk is that the word marzeach means nothing more than a party, and the suruchim refers to the zoinois. And he says, now that you will go into exile, you will be forced to put an end to the parties you made in honor of your mistresses. In honor of your zoinos, you would call them, you would take them out, a mistress, and you would have a party with them, and that would lead to doing an avera. This behavior will now finally come to an end because of your, when you go into galus. Okay, that concludes the Malbim. He didn't go into any big major sugyas, just basic stuff. Now we have two more things. We have to take a look at the Likutei Shas and take a look at the Chaimer Sanach. Let's go back to Pasuk Dal, the Mamari Chazal. Back to page 333, we almost finished 333. Pasuk Dalit. Hashoych ve'mal mito yishen usruchim al arsoysam amar b'yisr b'chanina on the very bottom in page 233 the Likutei Shas melamed shahayu mashtinin mayim b'fnei mito yishen arumim. Now this is a sugyim sechta Shabbos. And it talks about something that we may not appreciate, we don't understand, because Baruch Hashem, we live in a different society, but men used to urinate in their bedroom, on the floor. This was what they did. They had earthenware floors, so the Merak Lion would be absorbed into the what? Earth floors. Okay,
not that long ago.
Earth floors, and to go out to the Beis HaKisei was not very pleasant. A freezing cold night to go out to a Beis HaKisei it was even dangerous if you wouldn't go out. So people did not. They had a whole different standard of living, and it was no big deal for people to release Mei Raglayim in their bedroom on the floor, right in front of their bed.
That was special cave.
A bedpan, no bedpan, on the floor. On the floor, a chamber pot, a bedpan, whatever they call these things. No, they did not even do that. They did not even do this. They actually would release the Mei Raglayim on the floor. It sounds very bizarre to us, but this is what they did. So Chazal criticized people who do this. It's not proper. A person has to have more dignity. Maybe the Goyim did this. It was no big deal for the Goyim to do this. But Chazal were critical of individuals that would do such a thing, to release Mei Raglayim in their bedroom right in front of the bed. Melamed, and this pasuk is telling us, Hashoychvim, they lie, al mito shein, usiruchim, and that's what this pasuk means in the eyes of Chazal. Usiruchim. Usiruchim means they would release Mei Raglayim and produce something that is disgusting, something which has a pungent odor. Al arsoisam, al does not mean literally on their beds, it means in front of their beds. Hainu, mashtinin, mayim, bifnei mitoseihen, arumim, and it means they were naked when they did this. Megadev bo Rabbi Avo, he cursed. He says, this cannot be the pshat. You're putting things into the pasuk that do not exist. You're telling me the pshat in the pasuk is that Omois is giving musar to the people who are living in Yehuda and telling them, how dare you lie on such beautiful, expensive beds made from ivory? How dare you behave in such an unrefined manner by usuruchim, releasing urine al in front, ar soysa. How could you say this is the pshat in the pasuk? Because the next words of the pasuk are going down. Yeah, and it's a whole series of things that they're doing. Lochein, because of these averos, ata now yiglu b'roish goylim, you are going to go into exile. What? Because a person releases Mei Raglayim in front of his bed, he deserves to be exiled. The Beis Hamikdash has to be destroyed and he has to go into Golos? Ridiculous. You know, there are punishments. The punishment fits the crime. If the Avera is, they're being Mezaneh, they're living with Noshim, v'chulu, okay, I understand, that's one of the Gimel Averas Chamurais. But if you're telling me the only thing was because they're not observing the rules of cleanliness, hygiene, they don't have proper hygiene, and they're a little bit crude, they're naked when they do this, because of that, they deserve that the Beis Hamikdash should be destroyed. He reacted in a violent way. Megadef ba Rabbi Avo. Ihachi haynu d'siv l'chein ato yiglu b'rosh ha'goylim mishum d'mashtinin mayim b'fdei mitoseim arumim yiglu b'rosh ha'goylim. Elo amar Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Avo, I'll tell you the pshat. The pshat is, Eilu b'nei adam shoyu ochlim v'shoysim zem zeh. V'doivke mitoseim zo b'zo. umasrichin arsoisam b'shichva zera she'enoy shalohem. Like we learned, like Rashi cites, and like the Radak cites, and like the Malbim cites, it means people had, they led to znus, is that people got, couples got together, and they had parties, and they brought their beds together, and they switched wives. V'chulu v'chulu, all different types of terrible averos, averos chamurois, in the worst way possible, and therefore it makes perfectly logical sense why they did go into Golas. Next, Maamar Chazal, we turn to page 335. The Eichlim, one of the Averis, the Eichlim, the Karim, Mitzoyim, Bagolim, Nitech, Barbek, Omar, Yitzhak, Kol, Anene, Mitzudas, Harushus, La Soif, Goyle. Shenema, the Eichlim, Karim, Mitzoyim, Bagolim, Nitech, Barbek, Uchsev, Luchin, Ato, Yiklu, Bresh, Agolim. Now, Gavar, Mitzach, Lipsachim, this pasuk obviously is not for the faint of heart, but it means people, obviously, we're dealing with people, very exalted, very holy people, that a person should not stam eat. A person should only eat from a su'udas mitzvah. There were many tzaddikim like this, okay, not in our generation, but this is davar yodua, a very well-known thing, that tzaddikim, when you reach a certain age, a certain part of your life, you really don't need to eat very much. Okay, it's all diminishing returns. Person, as you get older, it's a fact, as you get older, your body does not need all that much. Child, it's amazing what children eat. You ever look at children, what they eat, what they consume? It's unbelievable. They eat all quiet, and they don't gain any weight. They gain very little weight. I mean, some of them. And as far as things are not healthy, sugar and ice cream and salt, the worst chazarai you can possibly imagine. For them, it's nothing. Water off a duck. I remember when I was a child, I think back what I used to eat. I mean, I can't even believe it. What you can put in your stomach, and has absolutely, at least has no effect whatsoever. But when you get older, you know, salt, sodium, and this, you got to watch your numbers, you know, everyone knows. It's really amazing how little you really need to survive. And indeed, it's a davar yodua that tzaddikin in previous generations would not eat ever unless it was from a su'udas mitzvah. If today in shul is a bris, Gevaldik. I have breakfast. The breakfast is enough to carry me until dinner. And for dinner, I'm going to another Sudas Mitzvah. And if there's no bris today, I'll fast. Big deal. They only ate from a Sudas Mitzvah. In fact, meat, this is, Chazal discussed this, it's called Besar Taiva. If a person In the Mishkan, let's go back to the time of the Mishkan, when Klal Yisrael was living in the vicinity of the Mishkan, the only meat you ever ate was Besar Kotchen. You shecht a carbon shlamim, and the meat is holy meat. It's a carbon. Its blood has gone on the Mizbeach. The Imurim have been burnt on the Mizbeach. And now there is the leftover meat. The meat is holy meat. There is a mitzvah to eat meat of kachem. And when you eat the meat, in fact, Chazal say, through eating the meat, you bring upon yourself atonement. The ochlu oisam asher kupar bohem. Melamed shaba olam oichlim, shakohanim oichlim, va'abolam eschaprim. So if you wanted to eat meat, it was a given. You're only going to eat meat that comes from a korban. The problem was, when they entered into Eretz Yisrael, and it was forbidden to build your own bama, your own altar in your backyard, and the only place that it was permitted to bring a carbon was in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, then, wherever the Mishkan Shilah, whatever it was, and you live 50 miles away, you live 100 miles away, I cannot every single night get on a plane and go to the Beis HaMikdash to bring a carbon to eat meat for dinner. So it's not possible anymore for me to eat meat that is holy. So what am I going to do? So this is the whole Daf Yomi is learning Masech Zvachim. Along comes Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu. There's something called Besar Taiva. A person has a desire to eat meat and does not have the ability to go to the Beis HaMikdash to bring a carbon, to bring meat, to offer a carbon, and that will give him the ability to eat holy meat. I am permitting you to eat meat of chulin, provided you do shchita, You kasher the animal, you don't eat chelev, v'chulu v'chulu, don't drink the blood. It's besar taiva. Okay, so along comes this chazal, that there, it's true, it is 100% permitted to eat meat. That is what's called a su'udas reshus. It's chulin, it's not holy, but you should know that there's a higher standard for special people only to eat meat that, or to eat from a meal that is a celebration of a su'udas mitzvah. Whether it's a wedding, a pidyon haben, a bris milah, a sheva brachos, a su'udas siyum, and a Shabbos, and Yom Tov, and this madrega to only eat from food that is being served in connection with a su'udas mitzvah comes from the pasuk that we've learned today. The words again are, Amar b'Yitzchak, kol hanene misu'udas harishus. If you derive pleasure from a meal that is not associated with a mitzvah, it's just fun. Let's go out to a restaurant to have a good, good meal. Fill up our stomachs with some good food. A person that behaves with such an attitude, la soif goyle, will go into exile. How do you know this? Because that's what it says in the pasuk here. It says over in pasuk, the oichlem kodib, I told you, it's not for the faint of heart. It's not for us today.
This also has to do with scientific. Before refrigeration, no one slaughtered a cow unless you had a gigantic beast.
Exactly. Rabbi Belsky used to call it walking refrigerators. Oh, yeah, that's what people in ancient times had walking refrigerators. Today, if you have you want to buy meat, what do? You buy, you put it in order, and you put the meat in the freezer. In the freezer, how long will it remain fresh in the freezer? It's okay. It depends on what a fine schmeck you are. But if you're not so meticulous, you have a good piece of meat can last in the freezer for a very long time. You'll take it out of the freezer. You thaw it out, and you'll be. How long can meat stay in the freezer?
Depends how you pack it and how it would spread apart. They put spread in a regular freezer, like you're storing it. They put spreaders. What they put
and how long can it last?
So the air circulates. Normally 3 months, but six easy.
Okay, three to 6 months.
6 months.
Ancient times, if you slaughter an animal and there's no refrigeration. So how long will the meat last before it stinks? 3-4 hours on a hot day. And that was another thing. They would salt it 3-4 hours. So what would you do exactly? Like you said, you would not slaughter the animal until you're ready to eat it.
Special occasion.
Special occasion. So where was your refrigerator? There it is, walking outside. It's walking around in the street. That's my refrigerator. The animal's alive. The animal's alive, walking in the street. The animal is like, it's like it's a frozen animal. I'm waiting to eat it. When will I eat it? When I'm ready. Whenever I'll be ready. In 3 months, I'll be ready. So in the meantime, it walks around. Instead of paying electricity, I pay food to keep it going, to keep the animal alive until I'm ready to slaughter the animal. It's a joke. It's an expression. It was walking.
For food,
exactly. That's what's the most expensive today. And even today, what is the biggest expense the United States has in supporting, in maintaining an army, in a remote location in this world? Yeah, let's say you have a battalion of, let's say, 500 soldiers, and they send them to Yemen, right? To sit there in Yemen somewhere to hide out and get ready. What's the biggest expense to pay their salaries and their pension? It's a lot of money. That's not the equipment. There are tanks and their high tech stuff. No, that's not the expense of transportation. You wouldn't believe this. Oil, the expense to transfer them, fuel to get them there, to get them back, and while they're there, to pay the utility bills, to pay the expense of energy to keep them going. This is the greatest expense the United States has in maintaining an army. Energy, not the salaries, not the equipment, not all the overhead. It is shocking, right? How could that possibly be? But that's what it is. The energy, basically to get them there, get them back, and while they're there, they have to have electricity, they have to have practice, they have to have energy to keep the lights on, to keep the lights on. It's not even the supplies; it's the transferring of the supplies.
During a
That's enormous, right. Enormous, and that's where all the big wars where the enemy was defeated. Usually, it's because of supplies. It's because they were not prepared. Oh, you send there an army of a million people. Yeah, and who's going to support them? What are they going to eat for the next 6 months? When they're laying siege, you have an army, and the army's laying siege against the city for 3 years. Okay, Nebuchadnezzar and Sancheriv, each one, they laid siege against Yerushalayim for 3 years. Where do they support themselves? Who fed them? How do they have to breakfast, lunch, and supper? There's no economy. No one's doing work. Everyone is sitting around, twiddling their thumbs, waiting until the Jews starve. Who is feeding an army of 800,000 people? It's mind-boggling. Yeah, you have to study. Where do they get food to feed these people? Breakfast, lunch, and supper. Unbelievable. Obviously, that was all part of their preparations. Or was it? Who knows? And in history, many, many armies of very major countries have failed because the warriors, the soldiers, were just not supported. They did not have what they needed on the ground to keep going. Let's finish this. So this is an amazing chazal that tells us a person should think twice before he eats a su'udas rishus. Because this pasuk says, those who ate from the korim, mitzoyim, vagolim, mitoch barbek, they ate just meat for no reason whatsoever. Pasuk goes on to say, chayin ata yiglu beroi shgoylin. Now again, so this obviously is not for the faith of the father, but you should appreciate that there's a middle ground. And the middle ground is certain types of dishes. Okay, I know the Satmarov, he never ever ate fish. Never would eat fish. He probably didn't eat very much altogether, but he never ate fish unless it was a Sudas Mitzvah. During the weekday, he wouldn't touch fish. Only if it was a Sudas Mitzvah did he eat fish. Shabbos, Yom Tov, and a Sudas Mitzvah. If it's not a Sudas Mitzvah, he would not eat fish. And all other Gedolim, all different, you study the eating habits of different Gedolei Yisrael, it's very, very fascinating that they would abstain from certain types of dishes, maybe meat, or maybe certain types of things, unless it was a Su'udas Mitzvah. This pasuk is not a catch-all, either all or nothing. That if it's not a Su'udas Mitzvah, you can't eat. Obviously, it's ridiculous. You have to live. It means that there are certain types of delicacies that are miyuchid for a Su'udas Mitzvah. If it's not a Su'udas Mitzvah, you don't eat. Donuts, you only eat Chanukah. Chanukah, if you say Divrei Torah, it becomes a Su'udas Mitzvah. Oh, so that's a mitzvah. So the donuts are not going to kill you. It's not going to cause your cholesterol and your blood pressure to rise. But during the year, what are you eating a donut for? It's poison. I'm just joking with you. But obviously, this idea is extracted from this fascinating Maimer Chazal. We're going to